All right, here we are again talking about coaching. I'm here with Yannick, and this is Sivash. How are you, Yannick?
Hey, Sivash. Good. Also, shout outs to Nikki. You can't be with us today. You're here in spirit, but I'm looking forward to recording this.
Yeah, me too. Let's dive in. So today we got a question. Is holding space enough to create results? I feel I should do more. Yeah, I think that's a great question, because we hear a lot about how important it is to hold space. And I think that's one of the things with coaching is the first thing when I think about a great coaching relationship is setting up that coaching container, that coaching space. So now the question is here, is it enough to hold space to create results? I think, what do you think?
Yeah, it comes back to that a lot. Like, I mean, I talk to a lot of coaches at the top of their game, and across so many approaches, what it seems to come back again and again and again is hold space, be fully present, you know, notice things, pay attention to what's going on in front of you, feedback what you're noticing, what you're observing, and work with what's happening in the here and now. So holding space for someone to really do their best thinking, tune in with themselves. You know, I guess you could argue that there's a lot of work, that there's a lot of doing in the act of holding space. And I think that's something that a lot of coaches, especially at the beginning, I think underestimate how much doing is actually involved in not doing, you know, and not intervening in being there and being with and holding space. So I guess the first part of answering that question or responding to that question would be, well, what does it actually mean to hold space? And what are all the things that you are doing to hold space effectively, so to speak?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, that's what came up for me, I think, is in order to hold space, right, we often have to do our own work, right? And I think, you know, with continuous coaching, continuous supervision, because what I think about is the person that's holding that space, and of course it's not black or white, but the person that does that really well has usually done thousands of hours. And it's almost like, you know, you see a black belt, you know, in action, and they're very calm, and they're almost like dancing with their opponent. And it takes a lot of time and practice to get there. And that doesn't mean that, you know, you can be fully present in moments in coaching. But I think, especially looking at my own experience, in the beginning, the first year, as I'm trying to be present, there's a lot on my mind. Like, shall I ask this question? Is it time to speak now? Mm. Ooh, like, shall I challenge them on this? There's so much coming up. And what I noticed that over the years with that practice is I'm just being more present, and my intuition is guiding me towards where I'm going.
Yeah. Yeah. As I'm hearing you speak, I'm thinking about some of those people that come to coaching, but they've already done thousands of hours, you know, because they've been reflecting on themselves. They've, you know, they've been doing their own personal work, or they have decades of experience being in relationships. You know, lots of people who come from corporate who've done a lot of leadership work, you know, they've gone through all these trainings, they've gone through all these workshops, they've read all of these books, they've reflected deeply about who they are, how they show up, how they relate to other people. So I think what I'm reason I'm saying this is because I see a lot of people come to coach training and they already come with so much. They already hold a really powerful space, you know, but then you throw a bunch of these coaching models and processes in place, and then they feel they need to be doing things, right? And often the client comes in and they have an idea of coaching being a doing thing. You know, I come to coaching and then we're doing a lot of work, and there's these activities and action plans and, you know, processes and methodologies, and they want to move forward. They're impatient and they want to accelerate. And I mean, you're one of the first ones. You must have said slow down 1,000 times in the first, 30 episodes that we've recorded for this. It's in the slowing down very often, in the holding of space, that somebody can really tune into what they need to tune into instead of trying to accelerate and doing more. That doing less is doing more quite often. It's, a difficult thing perhaps to wrap your head around. But, if you get it, you really get it. And once a client gets it, then they really value the space that someone is holding without trying to push them somewhere. I talked to David Drake the other day, founder of Narrative Coaching, who said a very similar thing. He said, I stopped trying to change people. I stopped trying to push for transformation or, run a process so that somebody can accelerate to change. I think it was Carl Rogers who said the curious paradox is that as soon as I accept myself as I am, then it's not that I can change, but then it's inevitable that I change. So I think when we hold space rather than push a process onto someone, then paradoxically often the change happens. So do we need to do more? Well, that's still a tricky question, right? Because I think sometimes it can be really effective to ask a powerful question or guide somebody through a process. I think generally, I believe with my humanistic stance and lens that people have the resources that once you help them to tap into themselves through space holding, then the answers will emerge. But I've also experienced that sometimes we offer something, we give something, we're a bit more proactive. Even a piece of advice or recommendation or a piece of information, a book that you might put on the table at the right time, it can really, really move someone and accelerate a piece of change. So I think it's context specific. I don't think there's a golden rule of no, just be there at all times and just hold space and wait for the client to really tap into their answers. I think sometimes there can be an action that you do or something that you offer yourself that really helps to move someone. How to make those decisions? That's an interesting one.
Yeah. I think it's in the wording of that question, right? That, for example, is holding space enough to create results? I think once we, I love what you said there about Carl Rogers. I think once the moment when we focus on creating results, we're often focused more on we often get out of the present and we're thinking, what shall I do next? Right? What do I do next to get them to that place?
Mm-hmm.
I remember in my coaching diploma 5 years ago, there was an exercise we had to do. We had to ask a question, what is on your mind? And put a timer for 25 minutes. We're not allowed to talk anymore. Right? And I asked the question. I thought that's such a silly exercise. And I'm like, okay, I'll play. I follow the rule. And as she's talking, I'm just writing things down like, oh, I could ask this question. I could do this. And she went through this incredible experience where she was complaining about her job. Then she broke down in tears and then had this breakthrough and this is what I need to do. And then at the end, she was like, wow, that was such an incredible conversation.
And I was like,
I didn't talk. I just asked, what's on your mind? Uh-huh. And that was the only question I was allowed to ask. And this comes from Nancy Klein's work, creating a thinking space. But I think it's that, right? Like in that moment, I thought I'm restricting myself. I'm limiting myself. I want to add. I want to ask questions. I want to go deeper. I'm not saying that's the way to coach, right? There's, Nancy Klein's work. She does great work with companies, with individuals. But I think it's that playfulness in, I think one of the things is actually sometimes go. It probably depends on the person. It probably depends on the situation.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah, I think you mentioned Nancy Klein's work, right? Thinking environments, creating a thinking environment. Nancy Klein's context is very corporate, working with very high-level leaders, mainly, right? I've had one of her global faculty trainers, Linda Espy, in the coaching lab. She held a thinking environment for someone, for a climate change activist. It was phenomenal to see because she said, what are your thoughts? And then she didn't say anything. It must have been the same thing for the first 30 minutes. It was a 45-minute session. And then she just said, do you have some more thoughts? And then they were talking for another 15, 20 minutes. And I was sitting there and I was wondering, how useful is this, right? And that person did really high level thinking and found it super, super helpful, you know, but you say it depends on the person. I think so too, but at the same time, I don't want to think so too, right? Because I want to believe in everybody's resourcefulness, but I do believe that some people are stuck in a loop and they're just ruminating right now. And if I don't intervene, then maybe they don't get out of that, or it might take months, you know, and a therapist would continue to hold space. And maybe it's not a loop. Maybe it's a ever so subtle spiral. You know, maybe it seems like a loop, but actually it goes upwards just a little bit every time they do a loop. Maybe that's just somebody's process to move out of the loop, and maybe that's necessary. Maybe if I intervened, I wouldn't do them a favor, because if we accelerate something too early, we try to push something that they're not ready for, it might be counterproductive. It might potentially be even harmful. You know, certainly that client would own it a lot less if I intervened in their process. So there's different philosophies around this, right? So Peter Hawkins I talked to as well. I asked him about that once, and he said, well, you know, I found him to interrupt. And he said, well, if we never interrupt, we're not doing our job well. So there's definitely different philosophies at equally high levels of thought leadership. But so I think it's really important we think about what we believe at the core about human development. And I think it's also important to check in with our client, like, how do you want to be worked with? And who is that person in front of me? To what extent do they have the resources to do their best thinking? Might it be important to intervene? Or might it be in the way? And it's sometimes really tricky to make those decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's, I've seen that it's, for me, is noticing, you know, how clients behave in certain, in that, within that space. So with one client, I might say, what is on your mind? And they might bring things that are very relevant to the work that we're doing, or the thing that they brought up in the first session, the thing that we contracted around. And with another client, if I ask them, what is on your mind? How was your week? And they, you know, they will talk 30 minutes about their mother-in-law and then just say like, oh my God, we just spent our whole session and we didn't use my session on what I really wanted.
Yeah.
Right. And sometimes it's shifting that question. It could be, you know, let me check in with you. What is going on? And then I might shift after a few minutes. And again, it doesn't need to be instructional, but sometimes it could be that we shift after 5 minutes and say, okay, thank you for sharing. What would be useful in regards to the thing that we've been working on? Or where are you? Where are you right now? Where are you right now with that?
Oh yeah, and so often clients thank me to say, "Oh, thank you for bringing me back. Right, thank you for reintroducing the focus that I had set at the beginning of the session. I said I wanted to talk about this. Who knows why I started talking about my mother? You know, and I think it's worth checking in. Why are you talking about your mother? Because it might just be exactly the thing that you need to talk about, and your brain went there for a reason, or your heart, you know? And what's the connection? But sometimes just inviting, like, hey, we're talking about your mother now, and you had started talking about your promotion. I just, you know, out of my butt, the example. But like, where's the link? Assuming it's linked. And sometimes they say, oh, it's not linked at all. Actually, my brain went on a detour, and sometimes my brain does that. So thank you for bringing me back. So then the promise never to interrupt could actually be a really unhelpful one.
I've actually heard stories from people that have invested a lot of money into even some famous coaches. And I've heard this, and they talk about their experience having worked 6-12 months with that coach. And by the way, these are great coaches, right? And I think it just shows what we're talking about. They say, you know what? I went there specifically, for example, to grow my income, to grow my business. But we end up just talking 80% of the 6 months. We focus on my relationship, or we end up focusing on this other side of my life. And while that was useful, I end up actually making less income. And so I'm actually quite unhappy with my investment. And I'm not saying this is all the coach's responsibility, right? Of course, the client has a responsibility. But I think coming back again, you know, to how do we help the client be a better client? What can we help them do? And what's our responsibility as a coach to check in with them?
Yeah. And I think the checking in is the crucial part here, right? That we check in. If we have a feeling that, are we wondering, are they getting what they want? We can just ask, right? Before the session closes, or before the next session really gets going. Hey, are you getting what you need from this? You know, you in the beginning, you said you wanted to focus on your business, to grab your example. And we've been talking a lot about your relationships. Is that what we need to talk about to grow your business? Or has the intention in the direction, what you want from this coaching relationship, maybe changed or evolved? Because that often happens. But just checking in, you can hold space for 90-95% of the session. But then some of that session, maybe you move into more of a doing, recontracting, planning or strategizing phase. And you just check in. Are we doing the work that we need to be doing here? Do we need to do more? If you're wondering, you know, that was the question, right? I feel I should do more. Well, if you share that with a client, hey, I feel I should do more. Do I need to do more? Do we need to do more? Do you want me to do more? Do I want to do more? Am I willing and able to do more? So yeah, I think coaches are doing a lot by holding themselves back from intervening in the client's process. That's a lot of doing involved there. That's a lot of bracketing our assumptions. It's a lot of paying attention to how I'm holding my body and what am I maybe unwillingly or unconsciously communicate. You know, so really hold a powerful space. That's a lot of work. And well, if you're wondering whether you should be doing more, just be in partnership with your client and have that conversation.
Yeah. And I think in this moment of being present, we'll notice things. They'll notice there's maybe a desire to ask a question or the desire to challenge something. And when we're not doing it, I think just, again, slowing down and seeing, like, you know, what happened there. So three questions. I've probably shared this before on the podcast, but I still ask these three questions at the end of sessions, seven years in. What did I do well? What can I do better? What can I do different? And sometimes I notice, hey, there was a moment I could have gone there. And it's not for me about this was the right thing, because sometimes it might not be the right thing. Right? But it's just that I noticed I was holding back what happened there in that moment.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, it was a bit of like, it was a bit uncomfortable. Right? Or maybe I felt that was going to maybe challenge the client. But I think that's the part where we can really, and we learn a lot more about ourselves. And then that's a space where we can bring it to our coach, to our supervisor, mm-hmm. right? Like, this is what came up for me. Because mm-hmm. I think like a question like that, I feel I should do more. Even be underneath that question is probably something else around, am I adding enough value here?
Yeah. And where's that coming from? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Enough. What's enough? What's why more? So yeah, there's potentially very deep conversations around, you know, how you have become the person you are today. What's your story? What's your narrative? What are the shoulds, the voices out there that, you know, or inside that tell you that you should be doing more? But yeah, discussing it with a supervisor, discussing it with yourself, and discussing it with your client. I'm often surprised at how often it doesn't really seem to be in coaches' sphere of awareness that they could just ask their client. They don't have to make all of these decisions on their own. You know, if we're working in partnership, we can include our client in that. Hey, I've been having this thought, or I'm telling myself this story, or I'm having this assumption, or I'm feeling this urge to fill in the blank. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. For me, I know for a long time, I would avoid that part because it almost felt like I need to know my stuff or I need to be the expert in this relationship. And I think that when we bring ourselves down, well, not down, like lower than the client, but when we see ourselves as equal partners in this relationship where it's a co-creation, we don't need to be the expert in all of this.
Yeah. Yeah, I always have this echo of Peter Hawkins in my head who asks, what's the work that we need to do? What's the work that is required of us to do in this space today? He says, when we walk with a client to the learning edge where they don't have the answer and I don't have the answer, but we both understand that life requires us to find an answer here. What a wonderful partnership that is. And if you set that relationship up in that way, then it's kind of countering this idea of coaching as a service provision, not in the kind of Chandlerian sense, but more in the corporate sense of like, I pay you, so you give me value. So go coach, do your work. And why are you asking me? You should know how to best work with me. It's like, well, you know, we're working together to figure out how you can make the best progress here. So shared responsibility. What do I bring to the table? What do they bring to the table? Ultimately, they need to be in charge of their work. They need to do the work. We're holding space. But then again, there might be a coach sitting out there who says, has a very different perspective on this. Says, no, I am a service provider and I should be delivering value and I'm being paid for my expertise and my experience and having studied the methodologies. And I respect that, right? It's just different lens on how to coach. And as long as this is set up in the beginning and, you know, both coach and client know what kind of relationship they're entering, I don't have any beef with coaches who believe that they're experts anymore. They're just, they're somewhat limited in the work that they are able to do. And that doesn't need to be a bad thing. They just need to pick their niche better.
Yeah.
Shall we leave that here? Or is there more from your end? I think I've said all the things.
No, I think that's great. I think, you know, we've talked about it from different angles. And yeah, if anyone else has thoughts on this, we'd love to see that in the comments. What is your experience with this? I know that my experience has shifted a lot over the years in seeing the value of that space for myself as a client, but also really as a coach.
Yeah. Yeah, I can already hear the different voices out there. You should absolutely do more, or you should absolutely do less. Less is more. No, more is more. You know, there's all these tools and techniques, and my clients love it when I give them tools and techniques, and that's really the value that they get from the coaching. And then others say, no, it's the space. Like, just have a space where people don't interfere with your process, and you have the capacity to think without somebody constantly intervening. So, you know, different perspectives out there. Let's get talking, right? To these podcasts meant to start conversations. So I hope we could start a conversation within yourself or maybe with some of your colleagues or some of your clients. Cool. See you next time.
Thank you for being with us today. I appreciate your commitment to learning and growing as a coach. Just a few things before you go. First of all, we're doing this for you, so if there's anything you'd like us to talk about, do send us a question. Secondly, we're not doing this for profit, so we rely on your support to help us reach as many coaches as we can. So if you can send this episode to a friend or tell a fellow coach about what we're doing here, maybe you can subscribe or leave us a review, or even support us on Patreon. That would be amazing. And lastly, you can find us across all major platforms, so whether you like to watch or you like to listen or you like to download episodes and listen to it in your car while you're driving through somewhere with no internet, you can do so too. And that's it from us. Thank you, and I hope to see you next time.